This is the best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the City of Angels. Where was thunder outside. Thunder and lightning. Two things you do not... Thunder, lightning, and bugs. We don't have those in Southern California. Kind of odd. You know what we also don't have in Southern California? Kawhi Leonard. Not yet, at least. Kawhi Leonard is now a member of the Toronto Raptors. We'll get to that in a moment. I want to lay out the show we have for you. If you're listening on Sirius XM Channel 83, you're listening to the iHeartRadio app, or any of our hundreds and growing stations nationwide, we appreciate you being part of our show. You can tweet us at Gottlieb Show or call us 877-996-6369. Or if you want the spell out deal, 877-99 on Fox. Give us a call. We'll get a chance to work you in. Peter King is going to join us. Bob Nightingale is going to join us. Chris Mannix is going to join us. And we'll talk a little college football as we continue to preview the upcoming season. New head coach of Arkansas, Chad Morris, former offensive coordinator at Clemson, former head coach at SMU, leaves one former Southwest Conference team for another, going from ground and pound with Brett Bielema to an air raid type offense. We'll talk to Chad Morris about the challenges of coaching in Fayetteville later on the show. Peter King, Bob Nightingale, Chris Mannix. Man, Cindy Katz, who books this show along with Rye Music, outstanding job. All right, so it has become official. This is not like the Manny Machado trade, which I don't really understand why baseball has waited so long. In an effort last night to be respectful of the game, hey, let's not talk about the Manny Machado trade. It takes away from the game. You actually took away from the game by not talking about the Manny Machado trade. Right, just announce it before the game, get it done with. Hey, at the end of the game, he's switching over to the National League, and then we move on and we play. That's not what's taking place with the Spurs and the Raptors, who late into the night, early in the morning, consummated a trade. Here's Greg Popovich.
We talked often over the summer about a lot of different things, both on and off the court. You know, attempts were made, you know, to see what would be best. And in the end, this trade appeared and we felt that this was the way to go. It's all ridiculous. Kawhi was a great teammate all the way through. He did his work. He was no problem for anybody. You know, talking heads out there have to have stories, and I get it. You know, all those stories that denigrated him in that regard, that was unfortunate and inaccurate.
All right, so Greg Popovich very much taking the high road. He went on to say that he thought both teams are going to end up the better because of it. He's excited for Kawhi Leonard. He's equally excited for their own all-star in DeMar DeRozan. I will tell you this. DeMar DeRozan's a hell of a player. Okay? He's a hell of a player. Is he a great three-point shooter? No. Is he a great defender? No. That dude can go get buckets. He can score. And last time I checked, I'm not sure. I know we use analytics. Last time I checked, they give championship trophies and they give victories to the team that scores more points than the other team. That's unless they've changed the rules since then. So DeRozan on some levels is being undervalued because he sucked in the playoffs against the Cavs. As I tweeted out earlier today, the truth is that both of these players had the exact same amount of impact on their playoff runs, even though Kawhi Leonard obviously didn't play in the playoffs. His tongue planted firmly in cheek. So what do we make of this? Some of it's about timelines, right? What the Spurs have been great about, is about extending their timeline as long as possible. Hey, you know what? Let's just be as good as we can as long as we can. And what many other NBA teams do is they try and find the timeline that fits perfectly with when they feel like they can be successful. Let's take the Lakers, for example. The Lakers know that LeBron didn't win a title his first year in Miami, didn't win a title his first year back in Cleveland. And the likelihood, the very strong likelihood is they're not going to win a title this year in LA. Why move mountains and trade away so many of your young assets when the Warriors are still the best team And next offseason is a huge one for the Warriors. Klay Thompson's up. Kevin Durant's up. Boogie Cousins is up. Draymond Green is up. Like, that next offseason is huge for the Warriors. Huge. Next year, this year, there were some fissures. This year, they could be had. This year, next year, it feels like the Warriors would probably be the best team. So just like the old war analogy, you know, why are we going to line up and try and beat the British Army force on force? They're better that way. But when we can outflank them, now we can beat them. Right? Guerrilla tactics, if you will. All they're doing in LA is saying, hey, we might not get you this year, but we're going to continue to institute our culture. We brought in a star who's going to help show our younger players what it's going to take that next step. And then next year, we'll add a piece or two piece, much like in Miami, as they added Ray Allen as they went along to two titles. Then you take Toronto. The timeline is different in Toronto. It's just different. You know why? Ding dong, the witch is dead. The Cavs are done. The Cavs were their nemesis. Rival means you're competitive with them. Nemesis means they got something on you. They could never beat the Cavs. And guess what? That's over. And so now, if you're Toronto, yeah, you can worry about whether you're not going to sign Kawhi Leonard. And sure, the Paul George thing gives you a little bit more hope. But hell, go for it. You had the best record last year. And if you're simply subbing out DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, Kawhi Leonard's a better player than DeMar DeRozan. I like DeMar DeRozan, and I think he's being undersold in this deal. But Kawhi Leonard's better. He's a former Defensive Player of the Year. He's an NBA Finals MVP. By my estimation, he's the third best player in the league. He's versatile. He can score at three levels. He can defend. He can essentially defend all five positions. And so, yeah, you might not have him next year, but you might not have an opportunity like this next year. It feels like the Celtics are ready, but they have not taken that next step. They still got to figure out how do we do with Kyrie and with Gordon Hayward and with Tatum. They still got to play together. They still haven't played together yet. Those guys played together for all of 2 minutes this year. The Raptors bring essentially everybody back, and then they sub out DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard after winning 59 games last season. Their timeline is different. They want to get to the finals. They want to be the team in the East. Their clock is right, like Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny? Right? It's all about timelines. Boston didn't make some dramatic move trading away a ton of pieces last year until they got a chance at Kyrie Irving. And when they traded for Kyrie Irving, they said, he fits into our timeline. Gordon Hayward, when he signed there, he fits into our timeline. They're all in their late 20s because they know once you get to that prime, that 26 to 32, you get as many dudes at the top of their game at that level, multiple forwards, interchangeable pieces. You got a chance to win the whole thing. And now LeBron's gone from the East, and the Celtics are like, now's our time. So are the Raptors. It's about timeline. Whereas the Spurs are, hey, let's just stay as good as we can as long as we can. And the Lakers know we're a year away. The Raptors are doing what the Celtics did last summer. Get a regular season record. Get a great regular season record. Come up short in the playoffs. Instead of sitting on their accolades, they recognize that they're not good enough. So you go out and you try and get the home run deal. What's different than that in Boston? They went to the Eastern Conference Finals. They had an MVP candidate. Granted, he was hurt. And they're like, look, we can stand pat or we can go for it. And oh yeah, by the way, the Warriors did the same thing the year before with Durant. We completely misremember the Warriors. Oh, they won 73 games. Did they win a title? Well, they had a 3-1 lead. They were also down 3-1 to the Thunder. This idea that the Thunder, the Warriors were the greatest team we'd ever seen because they won 73 games. Dude, they went for it when other teams were tanking. They're really good. But they realized that Harrison Barnes had a ceiling. And so they said, look, we like Harrison Barnes. We love Kevin Durant. The Boston Celtics said, we like Isaiah Thomas. We like all these guys. Remember, the Boston Celtics made 11 player personnel change last year. They had 11 new players. 11. Coming off of the Eastern Conference Finals. Because they sat there and go, like, these guys aren't good enough. We got as much as we can out of that. Let's get better. And the Raptors said, like, look, we got Ibaka for a couple more years. Don't love that contract, but we got him. We got Lowry for a couple more years. That's a lot of money. We don't love that contract, but he's pretty damn good. We got, you know, you kind of go through. We got Valanciunas for two more years. All right, what's it going to take to get Kawhi Leonard? You're going to have to give up your perennial all-star. I get it. I understand it. I like it. Now, does that mean Kawhi is not coming to L.A.? Comparing Kawhi Leonard to Paul George is comparing me to Paul George. We're just all wired differently. Kawhi's a different sort of dude. I don't think he sits out because you can't sit out two straight years of basketball. That's not happening. So I kind of understand both sides to it. And I still think that Kawhi Leonard ends up in L.A. Regardless of, you know, obviously barring you win a championship. And NBA guys love Toronto. Who wouldn't? International city. It's cold. Yeah, you're indoors when you're playing hoop and when you're driving to and from. But here's a guy who said he wants to L.A. And I told you at the time, I told you when the Paul George thing happened, or actually before the Paul George thing happened, Paul George stays, it's going to energize people to go after guys that don't want to be in a home. That's what happened. Remember, at first, Kevin Garnett did not want to be in Boston. You guys remember that? When Kevin Garnett was traded to Boston, it was like, well, you don't want to be there. It's a racist city. Like, no, it's not a racist city. There's racists in the city, but there's racists in apparently all kinds of cities. And then suddenly he got to Boston. He's like, this place is awesome. Because they were winning. And the same thing would happen potentially with Paul George. Although I will point this out, I follow Russell Westbrook on Instagram, and I noticed that they were best friends. And then he signed a contract, and Russell Westbrook continues to gallivant around the globe, and suddenly now all his Brodies are not named Paul George. He's a great recruiter.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It's show business, not show friends, right? You've heard that before? That's what NBA players are learning. DeMar DeRozan on his Instagram story says, be told one thing and the outcome another. Can't trust him. Ain't no loyalty in this game. Sell you out quick for a little bit of nothing. Soon you'll understand, don't disturb. And of course, this is all leading up to Adrian Wojnarowski breaking the story that DeMar DeRozan was traded. This is a week after DeMar DeRozan apparently was called in front of the Brain Trust in Las Vegas at the Summer League and told he wouldn't be traded. Remember, DeRozan, many people thought, wanted to end up in L.A. last offseason, but some believe out of loyalty, that's why he stayed up. That's why he stayed in Toronto. Isaiah Thomas, with his verified account, said, just learn from my story. Loyalty is just a word in this game. Well, look, Isaiah Thomas, dude, you had a debilitating hip injury. You weren't as good. And so they got rid of you. And the league tells you what your value is. And the league has said, wow, 1 year, $2 million for Isaiah Thomas. He lost a lot of money. He had a right to be angry and upset. But like, here's the thing about loyalty is we're told players are going to sit there and tell you like teams aren't loyal. It's a business. Are players not paying attention to how they have acted? Let me take you to Oklahoma City. And look, I'm going to tell you right now, I completely understand from a basketball perspective, why Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City and went to Golden State. Watch the last two NBA finals. Watch the series with the Warriors when he was with Oklahoma City and the last couple games, and you'll understand why. They were playing 2-on-5 or 3-on-5 when he was in Oklahoma City. And so his true talent couldn't come out. Couldn't come out. He didn't just want to try something different. He wanted to try something to where his talent could be shined or shown. I'm not really sure. I think it's shown, but I also say dove. People say it's dived. I don't know. Could be shown on the brightest stage, and it has. In the last two NBA finals, he's matched up with LeBron James. Not only has his team won, but he's been awarded the MVP. You can't make a better statement about why he did what he did. But let me take you to Oklahoma City. They were so loyal to him in Oklahoma City that even when he sucked in the playoffs against the Memphis Grizzlies, you guys remember that? Remember when he was bad against Memphis in the first couple games and the Oklahoman, which is the big newspaper in the state of Oklahoma, out of Oklahoma City, the Oklahoman had a headline that said, Mr. Unreliable. That the newspaper was forced to apologize for a headline that was accurate. The normally reliable Kevin Durant was suddenly unreliable against the Memphis Grizzlies in the playoffs. And when they wrote a headline as such, as a newspaper, the team was like, dude, shut it down or no access. There has been no more loyal organization to their players than the Oklahoma City Thunder. And what did it get them? Kevin Durant's playing in Golden State. The Miami Heat were completely loyal. Or let's start with the Cleveland Cavaliers were loyal to LeBron James the first time around. And you can criticize Dan Gilbert for his letter all you want, but remember, he went out and got Shaq and Antoine Jameson and anybody he could want to compete. And they even fired their coach, Mike Brown, after he won 61 games in the regular season. Why? Out of loyalty for LeBron James. How was that rewarded? He went to Miami. When he's in Miami, they went to 4 finals in 4 years. They moved mountains. They re-signed Chris Bosh to a ridiculous deal. Why? Because LeBron wanted Chris Bosh. How was that rewarded? How was that rewarded? He went back to Cleveland. He goes to Cleveland. They go into luxury tax. They spend more money than anybody in the sport. Even though LeBron criticizes them openly for not spending enough money, which is simply not the truth. How is that reward? He's in LA. So look, NBA players, you can get mad all you want over NBA teams not showing loyalty, not being honest. But all of the players have been getting together, predetermining where they're going to go in free agency, in spite of the fact that other teams not only drafted them, laid out money for them, offered them up huge contracts, tried to make them as comfortable as possible, tried to get their boys around. Hell, the Cleveland Cavaliers, like Rich Paul, you can rep all these guys. You guys can be around the organization. How'd that work out for LeBron James? They keep him this time around? No. You know why? Because players aren't loyal either. This is DeMar DeRozan and Isaiah Thomas being mad at NBA teams not being loyal is like the guy who cheats on his wife 10 times over, comes home, she's in bed with the FedEx boy, FedEx man, be like, I cannot believe you did this. That's what it is.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
Let's welcome in Peter King from NBC Sports, and he joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Man, there are so many things I'd like to get to with you, Peter. Let's start with Brandon Cooks re-signing a long-term deal with the Rams, which we all knew that's why the Patriots decided to part ways with him, decided to trade him, was they didn't want to re-sign him to a long-term deal. What do you think the actual numbers? I think it's $20 million is actually guaranteed. What does that do to the Aaron Donalds of the world who want a new contract?
Well, Doug, I think it's both Aaron Donald and Todd Gurley, obviously, are looking at this contract very carefully. the comparison here, quite honestly, because Donald is going to make more than Brandon Cooks, and my guess is that Gurley would make about the same. But, you know, so I doubt anybody in Aaron Donald's camp is doing anything other than just thinking, hey, just pay us. But this contract makes sense to the Rams for a very simple reason. Because in the offseason, Sammy Watkins, a much less accomplished receiver than Brandon Cooks, blew up the receiver market by getting $16 million a year in Kansas City. I think the Rams were fortunate to get Brandon Cooks for $16 million a year for 5 years. And so, you know, they'll get him probably through almost his entire prime. And so I think at that level of money, at approximately about 7% of the salary cap on average, good deal for the Rams.
Yeah, I it is interesting on how the Sammy Watkins thing changed the wide receiver market. Can you explain that one to me? I mean, like, look, Andy Reid's won a lot of football games, but Sammy Watkins was the fourth best wide receiver with the Rams last year. He struggled to be healthy. Like, how are we resetting the market based upon Sammy Watkins? That one feels like an odd one to me.
Well, Andy Reid is also the one and the Chiefs who overpaid Jeremy Maclin. So 5 years, $55 million, about whatever it was 4 years ago. So, look, I mean, Andy Reid wanted a speed receiver to pair with Tyreek Hill because he has a young quarterback who's got a Brett Favre-type arm in Pat Mahomes. And I think he believes that if I get these two guys on the flanks of my, on either flank of my offense, nobody's going to be able to stop us. And I would say he's right to some degree, Doug. But the thing that bothers me about this is, look at Sammy Watkins and his health. Sammy Watkins has simply not been healthy enough for a long enough period of time. I still wonder whether the foot problems that he's had during his career have gone away. And so that's why, to me, I didn't like this signing at all. I thought they overpaid Sammy Watkins.
Le'Veon Bell is going to play under the franchise tag. There was one report today that said there was only $10 million in guarantees. Last year's reportedly offered $30 million in guarantees. How far apart are you told, or do you know, that Le'Veon was with the Steelers with this long-term deal?
I don't think the Steelers, I think they were fairly far apart. I think the Steelers would love to have signed Le'Veon Bell long-term, but it was going to have to be at their number and at their guarantee. And so it doesn't sound like to me they were ever really that close. You know, you have to ask yourself this question, Doug. You know, I had first column at NBC on Monday, I had a chunk in there about, you know, basically centered around DeMarco Murray's retirement. And I said, look, in the last 10 years, Adrian Peterson won 3 rushing titles and 7 other backs also won rushing titles, 7 different backs. The average draft slot of those 7 backs was number 79 overall. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Kareem Hunt last year, won the rushing title, 86th overall pick last year as a rookie. And so I just think teams are viewing running backs more as interchangeable pieces who you could win with, you know, win with different guys. And it's probably not the smartest idea to go paying guys until they're 30 years old at a huge rate. It's what I go back to. I think it was 2005, maybe 2006, when Sean Alexander was paid huge money by the Seahawks.
Sure.
By his second year. The contract wasn't worth it anymore. I love Le'Veon Bell. I think he's one of the best 3 backs in football. But the fact is that teams have won and won big without the franchise running back.
Peter King from NBC Sports joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Aaron Rodgers is a really, really smart guy. And, you know, the piece you wrote on him talked about how Now, does he look happy? But he is happy. But he wants a different sort of contract. What exactly does that mean? What does that entail? Decipher Aaron Rodgers' lingo for me to explain.
Wish I could. I'm going to read the tea leaves on Aaron Rodgers because he didn't tell me what he wanted to do. I was the one who said to him, it makes most sense to link your contract to the increases of the salary cap, perhaps the increases of what quarterbacks are paid. That is what makes the most sense to me, Doug, because think about it. You know, Matt Ryan now is the king of the hill at $30 million a year. Kirk Cousins is number two at $28 million. They've both done those deals, you know, in the last few months. So let's say Aaron Rodgers hopscotches them and signs 6 years average of, I don't know, let's say $32, $33 million a year. Mm-hmm. That's the logical next step. Well, you know and I know that it doesn't matter how good or whether anybody is actually in Aaron Rodgers' league, the next quarterback to have the hammer is going to say, Aaron Rodgers making 33, I want 34. And that's the way the quarterback contract business works. In my opinion, 18 months after Aaron Rodgers signs for, let's say, $33 million a year, six or seven guys are going to pass him. And I think he believes, and his agent David Dunn believes, that it makes no sense for me to play that game.
You're a Hall of Fame voter. Give me your sense of all of this stuff going on with T.O. and the Pro Football Hall of Fame's reaction to T.O.
I've said all along that if T.O. doesn't want to go, that's the way life goes, and who cares? I think he's making a mistake, but whatever. It's his life. But I think the Hall of Fame would fall by basically kind of going tit for tat to him and saying essentially that, we're barely going to acknowledge you as a Hall of Fame ceremony. I think they should treat him the same way as every other person who gets in the Hall of Fame. I understand how they're doing it. I don't particularly agree with it. Doug, I think the larger, maybe not the larger issue, but, you know, this thing, if indeed, and I guess it is the reason that T.O. is doing this because he got jilted his first couple of years of eligibility, you realize that the Hall of Fame has over 300 people in it. And one-third of those enshrined, one-third, have been enshrined in their first year. And so I kind of look at this and I say, so are you telling the guys, the 67% of the guys who went in their second year, their eighth year, their 14th year, are you telling me that their busts are any different or their membership, their enshrinement in the Pro Football Hall of Fame is really any different than the guys who got in the first year? I think it's ludicrous. Nobody walks in the Hall of Fame and looks at the bus and says, you know what, Ron Yeary, he got in whatever, his 14th or 15th year. Hey, you know, he's not as great a Hall of Famer as, you know, pick a guy, whoever, Ray Lewis. He's just, it's silly. And I don't look at it that way in baseball. I don't look at it that way in any sport. If you're in the Hall of Fame, you're one of the all-time greats.
No, look, I mean, and he's like, and wide receiver, there's always been a backup at wide receiver anyway, right? It's really, the Hall right. has struggled to evolve, but the T.O. saying he's doing it for others is just laughable. It really is. Marvin Harrison didn't get in
the
his first time.
The mathematics make it impossible to put everybody in the first year who you might think or I might think belongs. It's impossible. Every year I walk into that room, there's 15 modern era finalists. Every year I walk in the room and I look at the list, and I'd vote for 10 or 11 of them that day right there. But I don't have that luxury. I get to vote for five, or we get to vote for five max. So if some guy doesn't get in, it does not mean we don't think he's a Hall of Famer. It just means that it's a numbers game, and you got to put in the guys who you think are most deserving. You can't put in the guys you think who are all deserving.
Let me ask you about your conversation with Ben McAdoo. You're the first guy to get Ben McAdoo on record to talk about what went wrong with the Giants. He was brought in to kind of elongate and save Eli Manning's career, and then he got elevated to being a head coach. He said it was his bedside manner that undid him with the move to, and they end up benching Eli Manning. But it wasn't, you know, like everybody signed off on the deal. They weren't even going to bench Eli Manning. How has Eli Manning remained kind of above reproach with all this stuff?
I think that's one of the most interesting things. I mean, Eli Manning is like a godlike figure in New York. And look, I wrote this last year when this happened. Ben McAdoo was the only adult in the room. Everybody else just at 3-9 or whatever they were out of the playoff race. Everybody else just wanted to keep going. And hey, play your guys and try to win every game the same. What good does that do you when you got Davis Webb, who you want to see 3 times, before the end of the year?
Yeah.
Everybody has said, well, wait a second. Why then did Ben McAdoo put Geno Smith in? Very simple reason. Davis Webb had not taken a snap all year with the first unit offense. He wanted to give him the best possible chance. So Davis Webb was going to play a little bit probably in the second week, and maybe all of either the last 2 or 3 weeks. And so, look, you know, the fact is that the Giants got spooked by the reaction. They had no idea that it was going to become the biggest cause celeb in years in New York sports. I was shocked at it. But the fact is, Ben McAdoo at the time made the right decision. It just wasn't presented to the public well enough. And
end up losing his job because of it, right? I mean, that's really kind of what it,
well,
what it comes down to.
He did, but he would have lost his job anyway, I think, by the end of the year. But be that as it may, I think Ben McAdoo in his comments to me, it was very, very evident that he would do the same thing over again, and good for him. He should do the same thing over again.
Go to profootballtalk.nbcsports.com. You can read Peter King's first column with NBC Sports. He does an incredible job. Can't tell you how much we appreciate you joining us here on Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks so much, Doug. All the best to you.
Pleasure's mine. That's Peter King joining us on The Doug Gottlieb Show.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Chris Mannix, an NBA insider for Yahoo Sports. He also has a show on Sundays from noon to 3 Eastern time right here on Fox Sports Radio. This week, Mike Hill, a good friend of mine, will be his co-host. Mannix, what was your reaction to the Kawhi deal?
I absolutely loved it for Toronto. I mean, I thought this was exactly what a team like that needed to do. Toronto is the 2018 version of Oklahoma City, a team in a bit of a predicament that needed to take a big risk. I mean, look, this Raptor team, Doug, before this deal, was not winning anything. I mean, yes, LeBron's out of the East, but they're still, I believe, a notch below Boston, and they didn't have a lot of wiggle room to get better. Their bench, those young guys, OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, yeah, maybe they can improve, but the core guys, the starters, they weren't going to get better. In fact, in the case of Ibaka, Kyle Lowry, they might even get a tick worse next year. Even if they got out of the East, they would be fodder for whoever comes out of the Western Conference. That's number one. Number two, even if it doesn't work out, this Raptor team has been itching to rebuild for a while. I mean, they just, you know, you go back to 2013 when they traded Rudy Gay off that roster for expiring contracts. That was the first sign of when they wanted to rebuild. They just haven't had the opportunity because they kept winning at a high level. So best case scenario, Kawhi comes to Toronto. It works out. He stays there long term. Worst case, they reboot this whole thing, which is something they've talked about internally there for a while anyway.
I hate to agree with you, but I completely agree with you. I mean, look, last year they couldn't get by their nemesis. Their nemesis is now gone, but everybody felt like they were forever limited by DeRozan. DeRozan got benched in the playoffs. But if you simply substitute out DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, you got better. And then honestly, Danny Green's not a terrible pickup either, considering his experience. He's not what he used to be, but if he's coming off the bench for you, that's a hell of a pickup. Like, yeah, it probably doesn't work in the end, but it's all about, to me, about timelines, right? Remember when the Celtics, they made those moves last offseason, Gordon Hayward, they said he falls in line with our timeline. Toronto's timeline is go for it now, and then we'll figure out the future. Whereas the Lakers, I think now, look really smart for saying their timeline is year two, three, or four.
Well, look, I agree with you on especially on Danny Green. You know, under Nick Nurse, they're going to even emphasize even more the three-point shot. Danny Green's a career 40% three-point shooter. He's going to help in some capacity. I don't know about the Lakers. I mean, look, maybe Kawhi isn't the end-all, be-all for them. We all know what the summer of 2019 is going to look like. I mean, a lot of free agents out there, from Butler to Klay Thompson, maybe even Kevin Durant. You know, I get all that. But if they really wanted Kawhi Leonard, not going after him aggressively, I think, was a mistake. I mean, and if you really believe that Kawhi Leonard's definitely going to head there next summer, I mean, that's the definition of insanity, right? I mean, expecting the same thing to happen over and over again despite the result. They just went through this with Paul George. And no matter what you say about Kawhi's intentions, and I've seen all the reports, and I know where these reports are coming from, like Kawhi, no desire to play there. Until we hear it from Kawhi Leonard, I'm not going to take the word of people in his inner circle. Because if you did that last year, Doug, nobody in Paul George's circle would have told you that Paul George would be back in Oklahoma City after 1 year. I think you're going to let this play out. I mean, Toronto is a great city. It's got a great fan base. And the biggest argument I've heard against Toronto in the last, like, you know, 8 hours is that it's cold in January. Like, if that's all you got, you better come harder than that.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're a betting man, do you think he stays?
No, right now, with nothing else happening, I would say the Lakers are the favorite. But I wouldn't even make a bet on it at this point. I mean, I had one GM tell me this morning that Masai Ujiri is going to be a major weapon in the recruitment of Kawhi Leonard. Masai Ujiri, as you know, Doug, is incredibly engaging guy, a really smart guy, knows how to build teams, knows how to connect to players. Look, Kyle Lowry didn't want to be in Toronto when he first got there. DeMar DeRozan was, you know, a Compton kid, played at USC. He wound up signing long-term there without taking a meeting anywhere else. A lot of that's the franchise, the fan base, all that. But a lot of that is Masai Ujiri being there and working with them. So you give Masai a full year, just like you gave Sam Presti a full year. I can't bet against Toronto at this point.
Yeah, see, I think it's a completely different market next offseason, whereas this offseason it was Paul George and obviously in LeBron James and no one else. Next season you have Jimmy Butler, who they think wants to come to the Lakers, Klay Thompson, who they think truthfully wants to be a Laker, in addition to all the other guys that are going to be on the market. Heck, I mean, look at Draymond, Kevin Durant. I mean, the Warriors are going to have some tough decisions to make if they don't, you know, unless they want to go deep into the tax. So, I think it's going to be fascinating, but I just think it's a different market next year, so that even though it feels like Kawhi or nothing, there's more than nothing sitting out there if he doesn't want to come.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with that. I mean, if the other options for the Lakers are incredibly appealing. One thing I would say that to counter that a little bit is just it takes time to build a championship level contender. I mean, look, you don't acquire anybody this year. That's 1 year of LeBron's time in LA wasted. Year two, let's say you get a piece or two. I don't know how many teams win a championship in that first year, like Boston did it a decade ago, but not a lot of other teams do. So you're talking year three maybe of LeBron before you're a championship team, and then you're talking LeBron at, what, 36 years old at that point. I know we think he's superhuman, could do this forever, but at some point you decelerate a little bit and he loses something off his proverbial fastball. I just think if there was a chance to pair Kawhi Leonard now with LeBron James, to get them comfortable, to figure out some chemistry between two guys that frankly play the same position we have for most of their careers, I think that's something that if you had a chance to do, you go and do.
Yeah, I hear you, but if you watch Summer League, and I know it's just Summer League, but Josh Hart looked like a guy who could be a starter, if not, you know, a top eight in your roster. You already have Ingram. You have Kuzma. Like, they're a little bit further along than people want to give him credit. You sprinkle in LeBron James. That changes the dynamic. I think bailing on too many pieces, and San Antonio would have asked them to overpay because there wasn't a top 20 player on their roster. I kind of think this is the smarter deal. This is the smarter path.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Not a top 20 player in your roster, right? But I'm not sure that the Spurs are in love with DeRozan here. I mean, I know Pop doesn't want to rebuild, but You know, DeRozan's got 3 years left on his contract, and the Spurs, in this sort of form, are looking to clear cap space. It wouldn't surprise me, actually, if come the trade deadline, you know, this year, you know, DeRozan gets flipped. If it's not, you know, going great there, I could see him getting flipped in exchange for a shorter contract type of deal. The other part of it is, I mean, Josh Hart, good player. Brandon Ingram put up numbers. But, you know, you look at what they got back in return. DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, a top 20 protected first-round pick. If the asking price was Ingram, Hart, and a lottery-protected first, I would have done that in a heartbeat if I was the Lakers.
I don't know if I would have done it in a heartbeat, but I probably would have done it. I probably would have done it. I probably would have made him ask for a heart. I mean, no, that's two starter. That's two potential starters for one star and a pick. But I don't know if they got to that. I think honestly, the Spurs asked for too much and were too steadfast in their demands, and that turned a lot of people.
Yeah.
That turned a lot of people off. That has a tendency to happen in these things. Chris Mannix joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. So it looks like Boston is going to re-sign Marcus Smart after all.
Yeah, they've re-engaged with him, and they started to in Vegas at Summer League, from what I was told. And you know, this is, you know, kind of I think anyway, it's more my opinion here, but I think it's Marcus kind of waving the white flag and realizing that there wasn't going to be kind of a Sacramento Kings Zach LaVine offer. There wasn't going to be a team coming in at the 11th hour. And from what I was told, Marcus never had any real desire to take the qualifying offer. He wanted guaranteed money over the next few years, and this is probably going to be the best he does. Now, you know, again, Boston has never blinked at the possibility of paying Marcus Smart $10, $11, $12 million per year. They just were never going to go to a Gary Harris level of $16, $17 million per year. So I think Marcus will be back on a $45 to $50 million deal over 4 years.
Ranked East, top four.
Boston 1, Toronto 2, but it's razor close, and Philadelphia 3.
Who's 4? Milwaukee or Washington?
Milwaukee, because I think Budenholzer is such a good coach. You know, not a great executive, but such a good coach that he's going to get more out of that team. But again, if you want to rank it by tiers even, I think Boston, Toronto on one level, and even Philadelphia is on another. I mean, remember, Toronto last year kicked the crap out of Boston a couple of times. I mean, their physicality gives Boston a lot of problems. Now you're talking about having two. I mean, Lowry is taking a bit of a step back defensively, but still pretty good. And if he's healthy, Kawhi Leonard is an elite, maybe the best defensive player on the perimeter ever. So you're doing some nice things defensively and putting yourself right there on an even level with Boston.
Yeah, I think we're underestimating how good Gordon Hayward is if he's back.
You know, I'm with you.
He was an all-star in the West. And then, you know, Kyrie's knee is, we're depending upon Kyrie's knee. I would put Boston 1. I too would put Toronto 2, Philadelphia 3. And then I think it gets really, really interesting. Milwaukee and Washington. I think Washington's done, I like what they did, you know, flipping their big guy and getting, even though they got Dwight on a minimum deal, they got Jeff Green to come off the bench for him. I kind of like what Washington's done here. If John Wall and Brad Beal can coexist, that's five pretty damn good teams.
You got to really motivate some of those guys, though. I mean, like, the health is the key factor with the Wizards, but I mean, Dwight Howard, you're hard pressed. Even like the Wizards, they would admit this, you know, privately. Like, you're hard pressed to get any of the coaches from Dwight Howard's previous team say anything positive.
Correct.
About him.
I heard the exact same thing. Like, it's really, yeah. But it's a lot like the. And by the way, Melo Houston, Melo Miami. Where does Melo play?
I'd be surprised, and I haven't talked to anybody in the last couple of days. But you know what? Right now, the Thunder have been trying to find, you know, a trade partner who would take him on just to buy him out, and they're trying to get an asset or two from Oklahoma City to do that for them. But everything I've been hearing, the rumblings I've been hearing, is that Houston has an inside track here to sign him.
I don't know if that makes him better or worse.
I don't either.
Man, it's great stuff. Can't wait to hear your show this Sunday with Mike Hill. It's noon to 3 Eastern time, 9 to noon Pacific. Chris Mannix, read his work, Yahoo Sports on Twitter. He's awesome. Thanks, Mannix.
You got it, Doug.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
But here's the reality to it. If you think this was Greg Popovich saying, giving you the old F-U to Kawhi, you don't like it here where there's no state income tax in Texas? I'm going to send you to where there's 50% tax in Canada. Yep. Basketball Siberia in Canada. Like, people who say that, and some of my brethren at Fox Sports Radio have said that. That they shipped them off to Canada. Hey, dude, if you want to say F you to a player in the NBA, there's only one place you send him to. Do you know where that is? Basketball Siberia is in the state of California. It's in Sacramento. I mean, come on, dude. It's not an FU to send the guy to the team with the best record in the East. I mean, that's not an FU at all, which is an incredible city. Do you want to live there long term? Maybe not. But anyone who's been to Toronto is like, dude, Toronto is awesome. I love our American arrogance. We do have it more than somewhat. Like, pick the cities in the Eastern Conference and you tell me where it ranks. Atlanta, warm, but nobody cares. Traffic's awful. Orlando, made-up city. Chicago, awesome city. Horrific weather. Worse weather than Toronto. Brooklyn, they're that other team in New York, full of hipsters who clearly love basketball. The Knicks would be a great destination. Charlotte is nice if you like NASCAR. They're not particularly good. Detroit, yeah, they built a brand new arena and still no one goes. D.C., I got nothing bad to say about D.C. It's an awesome city. Milwaukee, I love Milwaukee. They're building a brand new arena. Milwaukee would be an incredible place, but no one says that Milwaukee's some premier destination. Miami, Indiana, Cleveland, Philly, Boston, Toronto. Dude, Toronto's top five city in the East. And oh yeah, by the way, 59-23 last year. That's not an FU. There's really only one FU city in the NBA, and that's the Sacramento Kings. It's not just because of the city, it's because of the organization. Right? Anyone who says that's what Pop was doing. Pop told people, the Spurs told people, you want Kawhi Leonard, give us a top 20 player. Do you know what they got back in return? A top 20 player. That's it. That's really what it comes down to. They took the best offer. They could have taken an offer that was deeper, but they took a really good one. DeMar DeRozan averaged 23 a game last year. DeMar DeRozan's a damn good player at 28 years old, coming into his prime. His numbers were down slightly. Down substantially from averaging 27 the year before. He's a really good player that's an improved three-point shooter. He's not a marksman. He's more of a mid-range, one-on-one pull-up guy. He might not fit totally with what Greg Popovich wants to do, but considering you're San Antonio and like Toronto and other places, you can't get free agents. DeRozan and Aldridge allow you to be successful for longer. And as for the Raptors didn't have King Ace high and decide to go all in. They had a decent hand. Good hand. But they look around the table and they realize no one else has the world's greatest hand in the Eastern Conference, so now is the time. Right? Now's the time. We got plenty of chips, and we can either continue to make a little bit of money, win a hand here, win a hand there, lose a little bit of money, hand here, hand there, or we can just get it the hell over with and decide what we got right now. That's what they've done. Here's Greg Popovich earlier today discussing the Kawhi Leonard trade.
We talked often over the summer about a lot of different things, both on and off the court. You know, attempts were made, you know, to see what would be best. And in the end, this trade appeared, and we felt that this was the way to go. It's all ridiculous. Kawhi was a great teammate all the way through. He did his work. He was no problem for anybody. You know, talking heads out there have to have stories, and I get it. You know, all those stories that denigrated him in that regard, that was unfortunate and inaccurate.
Greg Popovich is like, look, this is a that's how professionals end a professional relationship. Did they get sideways over the injury thing? Sure. Did the uncle get sideways? Sure. But when they met man to man, they agreed to a mutual parting of the ways. It's a professional divorce. You wish everybody that got divorced could get along and enjoy the good times and not harp on the bad. And that's what it is. That's what it is.